And we welcome you back here on KVRB, AM 1400, 106.3 FM, KVSH, AM 940, and on our websites. We are in the middle of our 43rd District Candidate Forum with Colonel Tom Brewer and Tanya Storer. Again, if you have a question you'd like to get in to one of the candidates, or preferably to both of the candidates, you can give us a call, 402-387-1400 or 402-376-2400. We will get back into our forum. We've kind of touched on property taxes and the TIOSA formula. Colonel Brewer, we'll start with you on this question. So after property taxes, what do you see as the most pressing issues that are facing the 43rd District, and how do you plan to address those if reelected?
Well, again, no matter where you travel in 43rd, it is, of course, property tax number one. But actually, it's also just taxing in general. Because if you look at Nebraska, I don't know if we're number one, but we're in the top two or three in total taxation. And that's really a horrible place to be because, you know, one of those three issues need to be economic development. Well, it's hard to be in a competitive position with economic development if you're taxing people so horribly. Nobody wants to come there. And you have people retiring that are leaving Nebraska because of the taxation that we're doing. And I see that at Offutt, where they have a chance to cross the river into Iowa, and all of a sudden they have a much better quality of life. They got $1,000 a month more. They can make payments, whatever they need to do. So, you know, we got to figure out the economic development piece of this, which, you know, is a deep issue by itself. But I think we also need to remember that we've got two issues that are kind of woven together, and that's our schools and healthcare and hospitals, because this COVID has really put a terrible bite on our hospitals, because they kind of lock them down as this emergency backup, so that if everybody gets sick on the same day, they got a place to put folks. But what they did is they quit doing surgeries and people quit visiting, and now all of a sudden they're in financial straits. And so now we're trying to figure out how to sort that out. And the schools, we have to sort that out too, and the COVID hasn't helped our cause there. And, you know, when you lose your school, you lose your community. And we fought hard twice now to save Loup County, and we have been able to. And we're going to vote here in a few days. It'll be part of this vote when we come back, whether we save Loup County. And I've got a bill. I believe it'll pass. But these kind of issues, we got to be so careful about, because any one of these changes the complexion of a community overnight. The loss of school, loss of a hospital, and the economic development piece of this, we're hoping that we're able to get part of this LB 720 that's coming up, and we can talk about that later, but that's the economic development piece of it.
Okay. Tanya, same question. After property taxes, what do you see as the most pressing issues that are facing the 43rd District?
Absolutely. We've got to figure out how to get our kids back, and I certainly understand firsthand what it does when you lose a school in your community. The senator is correct. When my husband and I moved back 30 years ago to the Sand Hills, there were 19 Class 1 schools in Cherry County. Today, we bounce back and forth between 3 and 4. We don't call them class ones anymore, but rural schools serving that's such a huge county. Whitman, Nebraska, when we moved back, had a school, had a general store, had a lumber yard. Today, we have a post office that's open half a day. We can't do this anymore. We've got to be proactive in figuring out how we can create opportunities to get, first and foremost, our kids back. We're losing talent in this country. Literally, we start there. And my plan is very concise. One of the issues that's become very clear is we have got to be laser focused on building a better infrastructure. People are not going to come to communities that don't provide that very basic infrastructure. And we had some very thoughtful folks back in the 30s that passed the Rural Electrification Act because they understood the need for infrastructure in a rural community. And we need to start taking a very similar approach to broadband connectivity. It affects everything the senator just spoke about, quite honestly. It affects education, it affects transportation, it affects business, it affects health care. And we don't have time to lose on that issue. I believe strongly that until we get that infrastructure put in place, we are not going to be able to address the economic opportunities, the economic growth, the school, access to education, telemedicine, all of those issues. So broadband is top of my list for being able to pave the way for opportunities here in the 43rd District.
Very good. Thank you. Tanya, we'll stay with you on this. The availability of workforce and housing are also critical to future success in the communities of the 43rd District. What do you see as the state's role in enacting programs that would support housing and workforce development in rural Nebraska?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I have to be honest. I sat on the Blueprint Nebraska Board of Directors and Steering Committee, which was a statewide economic development board that was put together for the very purpose of identifying those issues that affect us throughout the state and make us competitive or uncompetitive. And housing and workforce development were at the top of the list. And surprisingly enough, it affects our urban communities as well. It's something that we share across the state in terms of a problem. So that's something we can work together with our urban senators to address. And, you know, there's a fine line between where government gets involved. I am a conservative. I believe that private industry is always your first alternative. But there are programs, I think, that can, you know, deregulate, perhaps provide some incentives to be able to get, construction started here in our rural communities. Some of the things that were discussed is even, you know, blighted areas, lots with dilapidated houses, being able to create a path facilitate, I guess, the folks that want to build on those lots and the folks that own them and just be a facilitator of some of that. So we want to move forward cautiously, but in terms of how involved government gets. But part of it is getting government out of the way, as far as I'm concerned as well. I've talked with folks across this district. Some have done it successfully in terms of building new construction, typically a rental, because in order to build new construction, it's just simply not at a price point where people with the salary, you know, average salaries that folks earn or wages that we earn here in the 43rd can afford new construction across the board. And so sometimes it's a matter of refurbishing as well. And I think a big piece to that is we have to look at that interior infrastructure first in our small communities rather than continuing to build out. Because that creates a long-term burden economically on those villages. So being able to utilize, the sewer systems and the current infrastructure interiorly first is important as well.
Very good. Colonel Brewer, similar. Has there been specific legislation or anything you've either sponsored or supported that would impact the areas of workforce and housing development in rural Nebraska? And what do you see as potential hurdles to passing those types of bills that might support specifically rural housing or workforce development and for rural businesses that really scream about needing workforce?
Well, I think the Commissioner covered that pretty well, and I agree with a lot of our comments there. 2 years ago, we did have a workforce housing bill that did pass. It, I think, benefited the urban areas more. Our problem is it's hard to force them to appreciate and understand how difficult it is out in these areas because nobody comes here. If you were to query the 49 senators, there would be about 21 of them that have never been past Grand Island, and then a good share of them have been past Lincoln. And so, Senator Wayne and I kind of got into it. We're on our way to Shattering to the governor's turkey hunt, and of course he was wowed out because he had literally never been past Lincoln, and so as we come west, and he explained all the challenges of North Omaha and why he felt that the majority of the foreign funding should go there, I tried to convince him that he needed to look at the fact that we don't have that huge footprint that North Omaha has, but we have all these communities. I mean, you combine them, we've got that and more. And after he drove through it and he saw it, first off, he was amazed at the beauty and the kind of old west atmosphere of western Nebraska. But he then started to get it. But you'd have to do that with about 25 of the senators for them to really appreciate where we're at. So I think many of the challenges that were brought up are exactly where we're at. And we've got to get folks better educated on what Western Nebraska is all about and what the challenges are there, because it's a part of Nebraska that is kind of forgotten by the other half.
Well, and Tanya touched on this, some in one of her previous answers, but improving broadband access, again, a major challenge facing the 43rd District. Do you see the state having a role in supporting the development of broadband to rural Nebraska, or do you see that more as something that should be a federal government undertaking, potentially?
Well, no, actually we have, and I'm on this rural broadband task force that was put together with LB 992, which was Senator Friesen's bill. Friesen heads the communications committee, and And it takes a look at where we need more fiber optic cable and some of the specific areas that we want to relay to the feds. But there is primarily federal money that's going for this. There's very little state money just because of the way it's structured right now. But educating our federal folks on what that should look like is what we need to do.
Very good. And Tanya, you touched on this, but you know, just curious, as a rancher in a rural area with that, you know, with a business, and then of course with your experience in schools and in the county, how has the lack of broadband access been a limiting factor? First of all, to your personal operation, but then also to the boards that you've sat on.
Oh my goodness, broadband, I've come to view this. Broadband is the great equalizer of our times right now. And so, you know, in agriculture, agriculture has sort of been a leader in many ways in the use of technology, particularly in our grain industries, you know, auto steer technologies. People can monitor pivots and the amount of water on their fields. You know, they can be across the ocean in theory and do that. And so it absolutely is something that we have to have in place, not only for agriculture, but when you look at mental health, let's just talk about that for a minute, and the access to mental health, broadband can be an equalizer with that as well. And after COVID-19 in particular and the commodity markets we've experienced in the agriculture industry, all jokes aside, I think we're going to have an increasing need. And we need to continue to increase awareness of mental health overall. But, you know, my plan has been very thoughtful about broadband. And again, I go back to the template that was laid out for us with those folks that created the Rural Electrification Act. And Nebraska is a leader on that. We're a public power state. And so I think we can piggyback on that same model. The Tennessee Valley Authority is doing some really great things that reflect that sort of model as well. We don't have to completely recreate the wheel here, but it comes down to, first of all, acknowledging what infrastructure is already in place. Maybe it's not all going to be fiber. There's going to be areas that maybe it makes sense to utilize the infrastructure that's there for our electricity grid, quite frankly. And so it's important that we continue to make sure we're improving that access and piggyback on that potentially. There's some technology out there that looks promising. So it's probably going to be a combination of fiber as well as new technology that can utilize the electrical grid. You know, the cooperative model that we use in most of the rural parts of our 43rd district in particular for electricity, I think, has proved very effective and is something we need to take a look at for broadband as well.
Okay. Very good. Last question before we get to some questions from our callers. I want to start with you, Tanya, on this one. If elected, you would become one of just a handful of senators that represent rural Nebraska. How would you plan to build a consensus with urban lawmakers to get bills that benefit greater Nebraska over that 33-vote filibuster-proof threshold that's needed?
Well, first I would say that we don't need more senators for necessarily the state or more senators representing Omaha. We need a strong senator to represent the 43rd district, and so that's going to be my number one priority. But you're absolutely right that in order to get bills across the finish line, we've got to be able to sit down and have meaningful dialogue with those folks who represent areas that are different from the 43rd district. I've already developed a network with a lot of leadership folks in leadership across the state through various positions I've sat on state boards, that whether that be the Farm Bureau Board of Directors, the Blueprint Nebraska, where I had the opportunity to sit around the table with some of the most brilliant business leaders in this state that are very engaged in their communities and in affecting legislation. And so I've been building that network, I'll be honest with you, for probably 25 years through my involvement in public service in both the 43rd and statewide boards. And so it absolutely, we've got to find the things that we agree on. We've got to find the commonalities and the challenges that we share. And there are more than you would think. Broadband is one of them. Housing, workforce development is one of them. And the property tax issue is becoming something shared again, as we spoke earlier, with more folks across the state, those homeowners in Lincoln and Omaha. And so we capture the value of those commonalities first. But at the end of the day, I absolutely will not support a bill that ultimately does not make life better for people in the 43rd District. I'm elected to would be elected to represent the folks here. And so if it's not going to move the needle in our direction, then that's not a compromise I can make.
Thank you. And Colonel Brewer, you've seen the difficulty firsthand in legislation that gets bogged down by extended debate, filibusters. What's been your method this term in trying to gain that consensus to get some of the bills that you have sponsored the support needed to pass?
A lot of the work that you do that results in success happens not in the chamber. It happens doing events and activities outside of the chamber. I mentioned about bringing Senator Wayne, and each year we bring about a half dozen to a dozen senators out to Chatham for the annual Governor's Turkey Hunt. It's a chance to kind of show off Western Nebraska, but it's also a chance to get one-on-one with them and to kind of break down the barriers and get them in the mindset of what the challenges you're dealing with are. You know, as a committee chair, you meet with the other committee chairs, and they influence a lot of folks because they've been selected by the body. And in that position, you have the ability to help shape some of these fights in a positive manner for the district. But I think you have to be realistic that you are a Nebraska senator, and you got to figure out what is best to move Nebraska forward and still take care of your district. And those are two balls that are kind of hard to juggle.
Very good. Okay. Well, at this point, Mike, we will go ahead and start with some of the questions that have been called in. I know we've had a few calls that have come in from people wanting to know specific things from our candidates. So I'll give it to you to ask a question that's come from a caller.
All right. Again, we want to give our phone numbers out. If you want to call the KBRB studios, it's 402-387-1400. And the KVSH studios, 402-376-2400. The first question we had was for Senator Brewer. What legislative bills that you have introduced or worked on or gotten passed that has benefited economic development in the 43rd District? Can you elaborate on some of those bills, please?
Well, obviously anything that has to do with property tax relief indirectly is an economic development bill. The thing that we've tried to look at when it comes to economic development is try and prevent the effort that's ongoing right now with LB 720, which is being called the Economic Development Bill. The problem with that bill is it's the same thing that was passed years ago that we're living with now, and that provides resources to companies that are primarily in Omaha, some in Lincoln. And so you're going to spend $500 million to $1 billion to prop up companies, and to a degree that's exactly what you're doing, because a lot of that money went to ConAgra. A lot of that money went to TD Ameritrade. People that are not directly supporting the 43rd District in any way, and that money is gone when they're gone. And so we've made some poor choices. But the other thing that we're doing is we're robbing the people of the 43rd District. We're taking our youth and putting them to work in those jobs. And so we're not doing anything to help economic development in the 43rd District by these economic development bills. So what we're proposing with 730, I met with Brian Sloan, the head of the chamber yesterday, and asked him if we could look at dividing 720, and that's $100 million a year for 5 years, and one-third of it go to each legislative district, not the 49, but to the three congressional districts. So roughly $33 million to each. That distributes it fairly. Now, he didn't reject it, but didn't totally embrace it either. But those are the things we've got to do in order to make it possible for us to have the resources we need in the district. Because you can have all the good ideas in the world, but if you can't actually put money in the district, whether it be low interest or no interest loans, it's hard to start the businesses and then lower property tax.
Okay, during the primary election, this is going to be for Tanya Storr. During the primary election, Senator Brewer won district-wide. What makes you believe that you can turn that around here in the general election?
absolutely. Mike was stealing my microphone. Absolutely. This has been the most historical, unusual election cycle anybody's ever experienced. COVID-19 shut down America, literally. Shut down the world, quite frankly. And so to campaign in an environment where you can't get in front of people and have conversations and listen to them as much as talk to them makes it very difficult. And so now that things have opened back up, I'm spending most of my time fulfilling my obligations as a county commissioner, certainly first, and any other spare moment I have. I've been out in the district since June 1, meeting with folks door-to-door, civic groups that are meeting again, commissioner boards, school boards. That is how I plan to change the numbers, is to listen to people. That's who I'm campaigning to represent, are the good folks of the 43rd District, and I need to hear from them. And they need the opportunity to get to know me. And so it's going to be, it has been, and will continue to be 5, 6, 7 days a week out in the district, on the road, hearing from the good people of the 43rd District.
Very good. That's what you have for callers so far, Mike.
That's what we had for calling questions thus far, Greg. Go
ahead. Very good. Well, so just wanted, we're, you know, got about 10 minutes left. Wanted to touch on just a few other topics, kind of generally, instead of some of the deep dives that we've done. We'll start with Senator Brewer. You know, the long-term impact that COVID-19 might have on our state budget. How do you potentially plan for that loss of revenue? Because everything we are talking about here today, whether it's the TIOSA formula and adding money to state aid to education, whether it's property tax relief, those all carry a price tag. So how do you see the legislature moving forward when that is hanging over the head, that we don't know what the revenue situation is going to look like?
That is a great question. We currently have a projected number of around $500 million, and this from Senator Stenner, who heads up the Appropriations Committee. We believe that number is going to be lower because we've had better than expected returns on income and sales tax. That still doesn't get us close to where we need to be. We will likely be down somewhere in that $250 to $300 million range. We'll know more after today. There's numbers coming in right now as we speak. That'll help shape what we see on Monday. That'll help us to then figure out how we're going to make our budget balance. And keep in mind, in Nebraska, by the Constitution, we have to balance the budget. So that's our number one issue. Now, with that said, we could do the $250 to $300 million and probably still be able to do property tax relief and the economic development if we don't have bills that cost. And that's going to be the trick. The Speaker has come down and said any bill that you have that has an A bill, and I've got some that are ready for the last vote and signing of the governor that are now on hold, are no longer going to be valid because I'm not going to put them on the schedule. And that has changed, and that's overnight hundreds of millions of dollars that were going to be part of our spending. And with that act by the Speaker, I think you're going to see us when we go back into session, we're going to have two or three lost days where it's just a cat fight. Ernie Chambers will own the mic for a while. I think Justin Wayne will own the mic for a while. They're going to talk Black Lives Matter. We're going to talk a lot of things that aren't going to do anything to change the outcome of property tax or economic development. But I think then the first thing that we have is 1106. The Speaker told me that in a meeting a couple of days ago. So we're going to figure out property tax. And I think if those two is all we get out, we're going to consider it a successful 17 days.
Hey, Tanya, so along similar lines, if you're elected and you start having to see some of the price tags that come with these, with any individual piece of legislation, what would be your methodology for kind of prioritizing ways that state funds get spent if we run into revenue shortfalls due to COVID-19?
Well, I think, you know, we have to look at the basic infrastructure needs of the state first and the role of state government. That absolutely needs to take priority. You know, we have to maintain good infrastructure in terms of our roads. That's the lifeblood, especially for the 43rd District, getting our product to market and for the folks that live here. Education certainly is a priority, but those dollars need to be distributed fairly across the state. We have obligations that we have to meet first in terms of Medicare, and those are issues that you're obligated to, right? And so deciding how those dollars are spent. So it's the obligations and the infrastructure needs and the role and the responsibility of the state that are very basic that you have to prioritize and address first, and making sure that when you move beyond that, you know, and again, as we sit here today, we need to make sure that we're funding our police and our you know, system of protecting our citizens well. In that conversation, as we sit here and watch what's happening in this country, and the whole concept of defunding the police is absolutely insane. And so those basic protections for our citizens are included in that conversation. You know, when it gets to the extras, if you will, let's call it disposable dollars, and that's when the lobby comes in and everybody's vying for their little piece of the pie, then ultimately those dollars need to be spent in a way that you get a return on investment for not just the state, but for the 43rd District. Those dollars should be being spent in a way that actually create opportunity and provide for a path forward for this state and for the 43rd District. So you have to look at it somewhat through the lens of a business perspective as well. So, you know, you put the big rocks in first, and then you go from there.
Very good. Mike, did you get another caller question?
Yeah, I'm thinking about how to phrase that one correctly, but I do have a question. I think we would be amiss with just a few minutes left in here if we didn't touch upon the wind energy issue that's been going on, especially in Cherry County, but then also on livestock and the future of livestock industry and the crop industry and stuff, more specifically here in the BKR area. But when it comes down to private property rights, I think Tanya was last. Let's go to Senator Brewer. And Senator, your thoughts on private property rights as it goes in reference to wind energy?
Well, I have been a opponent of wind energy from day one, will continue to be. I believe it's a scourge on society, on the state, on the district. I think that's probably my best way of describing it. And the issue with private property rights is I fully support people's personal private rights. But when your actions and what you do on yours affects your neighbors, that's where I step in and say, no, that's wrong. And that's why I've sponsored legislation. LB 373 was going to force that the issue of noise, setbacks, and decommissioning had to be addressed by the counties, because not all the counties are doing that. And, you know, I fought for LB 155, which was to change the rules with the right of eminent domain, because if you want to put in a wind tower, I shouldn't have to have power lines across my land going to your wind farm if it's for private use. And so I'm not flexible. I'm not going to change. And I guarantee the next 4 years, you haven't even begun to see some of the legislation that I'm going to propose. But I think we need to put into question the future of public power in Nebraska. When Nebraska produced their own power, when they distributed it to the homes, I think it was a good scenario, and it's the way it was meant to be. Unfortunately, the way it's become now is NPPT is this bloated monster that doesn't respect the people, and that is going to change. And I think there's a mood right now within the legislative body to change that and force the issue of accountability, because they joined the Southwest Power Pool with no vote of the ratepayers, and I believe that's wrong. And there's a lot of things, the R line. I could not have been happier with the decision there. I will continue to work with U.S. Fish and Wildlife to keep that R-line from taking the route that was scheduled, and that's the way I'm going to pursue that one.
Okay, Tanya, maybe your comments on the wind energy. You've been forefront on that in Cherry County.
Absolutely. Thank you. This is an important issue to address, and the senator certainly has said that he is a strong opponent of wind energy. I am certainly no advocate of wind energy myself, but only one of us has indeed taken campaign dollars from wind energy developers. Senator,
that is
and that's
untrue.
You. It's not untrue.
It is,
okay.
Too.
Well,
guys,
we're not. We've done very well.
It's not. It's an open lie. What it is.
We've done very well for the entire hour. We want to keep this as cordial as it's been for the entire hour. So let's phrase it more, I guess, Tanya, with your views on wind energy.
Sure, absolutely. Tenaska is the company, by the way. But in terms of the issue of wind energy, in Cherry County, we have done. We haven't just talked about it. We've actually done more to protect the property owners, especially in the light of eminent domain. And let me be specific with that. So Cherry County Commissioners, on my watch, I voted for it. We passed zoning regulations that will not allow a permit to even be considered before the Cherry County Commissioners until only if all easements that are necessary to get that power from the point of origin to a public power line are filed at the courthouse first. So basically, if your neighbors don't agree with what you want to do, it's a no-go. It doesn't even come before the Cherry County Commissioners. On the decommissioning issue, we've acted. We've taken a very strong position there as well. We put conditions on the one 19-tower project that's been permitted in the county that say we will require 125% of all financial resources necessary to decommission that product on day one. So we're not waiting for year 5, year 10. It has to be made available day one before that company can turn dirt. And so we are asking for 10% of that to be in a cash, deposited in cash in a Cherry County bank, and the balance, the 90%, will be an irrevocable letter of credit. We've taken the strongest position that I'm aware of, certainly in this state, on property rights on a county level, eminent domain, and decommissioning. And so I feel very good about the hard work we've done to represent the interest and the property rights of all folks. And, you know, the one thing we want to be very careful about when we talk about property rights is every time that we start layering another issue that you absolutely arbitrarily cannot do on a piece of property, you actually devalue that property. A property right is a right of use. Zoning, as I look at zoning through this lens, and that's the tool that counties have to regulate the use of land in their county to protect all property owners. And I view zoning as ultimately our goal should be able to allow people to use their property to the fullest extent possible. This country was founded on a strong private property rights system. It allows us most all the other freedoms that we have. But that zoning should also be able to try to identify that fine gray line of where does my use cross over and take away from the value of your property. And so that's the focus that I'm going to continue to take in my role as a Cherry County Commissioner in terms of property rights and wind energy.
KBSH Valentine.
Going to give each candidate a chance to kind of sum up with a couple of minutes on their candidacy, on things they'd like voters to know about them as we wrap this up. And we'll start with Senator Brewer.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Well, we're about to go into session on Monday. And it's been a long 3 3/4 years that I've been in Lincoln. If you have the time to get on the website and take a look at the number of bills, number of weeklies, all the things we've done to keep folks informed, you know, I think we've really gone our way. And the hard work to get to be a chairman of a committee and managing those resources, you know, has been the primary focus I've had. I think the work ethic of 36-plus years in the military has helped me to maybe not be as kind to my staff as I should be in working them long hours, but it's a big district, and there's a lot of things that need addressed. And so we've tried to do that. In a little over a month, we'll start our ride during the Brown County Fair across the district, and we're going to be in a different town every night, and I'll be putting that in the papers. And if folks want to come and talk issues, they're welcome to stop wherever and just share their thoughts.
Okay, thank you. And Tanya, your closing thoughts.
Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity to visit this morning. I think these sort of forums are very valuable for voters to sort of hear from us both, both candidates, and understand where our positions are on the various issues. So I'm going to continue to work hard through the end of this let you know through this race until our votes are cast in November. I am absolutely committed. I have bootstrap work ethic. I'm a Sandhill girl, born and raised here, and you know, we're known in the 43rd in particular for our work ethic and our commitment. And so I am going to be out in the communities, might knock on your door or see you at an event throughout the summer, because it's very important for me to hear from people here in the 43rd district and to give them the opportunity to get to know me. I love where I live. We have got to have a strong advocate that understands agriculture in particular. That's the lifeblood of the 43rd district. Again, it's my livelihood. It's where I've spent all of my life. So I understand that issue inside and out, and I'm ready to engage on conversations legislatively that can create opportunities for us here. And broadband, of course, property taxes is the, and it, you know, goes without saying, will remain the number one issue, but the infrastructure will be right up there at the top in terms of priorities. So thank you so much for the opportunity, and I look forward to meeting folks out and about.
I want to thank Senator Colonel Tom Brewer and Cherry County Commissioner Tanya Storer joining us here for this candidate forum. I hope you folks have found this very informative. Appreciate the candidates taking the time to join us here on KBRB and KVSH. We are 3 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. And again, don't forget to get registered. Voting takes place first Tuesday in November, so we've got a little while to go. And we hope that by November, maybe we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel as far as getting back to whatever normal's going to look like. But Tanya, Colonel Brewer, appreciate the time. Thank you very much for joining us. And we are going to send you folks on KVSH back on your way today. And for those of you here on KBRB, you'll be joining in with CBS World News.